The other day at TOS Towers, the arch middle manager slash cosmic space bird Kez decided it wasn't enough for us to just put out a new episode of Audio Fiction every Monday morning. He hopped over to our desk and slammed his cleaver down, slicing it in twain, notebooks, pen pots and all. He gazed upon us and squawked a single word: audiobooks. And so we are now doing audiobooks. We're super happy to bring the first The Other Stories audiobook to the world, Territory. In a remote Finnish hunting community, darkness and the cold hold the villagers close. As a pack of wolves threaten the villagers' future, grief-stricken hunter Yari must unite the population to reclaim their territory. Written by TOS regular writer Dan Howarth, narrated by Justin Fife himself, produced by Luke Condor and Carl Hughes. You can get the full audiobook from all good audiobook retailers. We're talking your Audibles, your Spotify's, your Black Markets. For more info, head over to theotherstories.net/territory.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
These aren't the stories your mother told you. No, these are the other stories.
Chew Toy. Written by Luke Condor. Narrated by Josh Curran. Puppy? She said, still half asleep. I willed her not to lift her head, to turn it. I didn't want her to see me like this, with my intentions written in the fur of my neck, in the bloody prints I'd made in the cream-coloured carpet. I wasn't ready for that yet. Not until I'd finished the job. Strange ways. That's the word that came to my head at that moment. Actually, they don't call it strange ways anymore. That old high-security prison up on Southwell Street in Manchester? No. These days, they refer to it plainly as HM Prison. But that never worked for me, because that place, with its bile stink and flies, oh man, the flies, is the strangest place I've ever known, because that's where I first talked to the demon. That's where I first met Guta. The one who gave me my power to possess. And if I can't blame that little silver-tongued bastard for where I am now, for the brassy taste of blood catching on the back of my throat, then who could I blame but myself? And if I'm to be honest with you, I'm not quite ready to do that. For if I were to blame myself, then my whole reasoning for this, what I'm about to do, which even in my twisted mind is something truly horrific, goes right out the window. And my reasoning? Well, for love, baby. I'm doing it because I'm in love. Her name is, no, was Judy Jerrick, my sweet JJ. 10 years younger, didn't she just look it? The girl who just so happened to move into the house one door down from mine, as if fate herself had placed her there, handed her the keys, took the deposit. I watched her from my kitchen window. Saw her moving her boxes, all bent and broken, words scrawled on the side in Sharpie pens, books, kitchen, bedroom, shoes. I watched her struggle, and I couldn't take my eyes away from that auburn hair up in that top knot, that raggedy old Kiss t-shirt with cigarette burns riding up and over her belly button. I only offered to help her after she caught me watching, waved at me and introduced herself. "And you are?" she'd asked as she put the kettle on to boil, grabbed two mugs straight from the packing box of kitchen stuff and popped in two tea bags. Chris, I said. Well, I mean, it's Christian, but you can call me Chris. And that she did, for a while. Later on, though, she'd come to call me a monster. Shit, no milk, she said. In that short time it took me to go back to my house, open up the fridge, grab the milk bottle, sniff it to make sure it hadn't soured, it hit me. JJ, this girl who was moving into one door down, I think I loved her. Now you might think that's a hasty thought for someone you'd known for all of 20 minutes, but here's the strange thing. I think I made her real. I think I'd been dreaming of her for most of my life, and now here she was. As if I'd thrown enough pennies into the wishing well and was just now withdrawing my savings with interest. To be fair though, I didn't tell her that. I don't think I ever did. I did ask her to go on a date with me, and another one or two after that, but I never told her how I felt and I never got the chance to. The whole thing lasted all of 2 months and I don't think she ever thought of it as a relationship. But she knew that I did, and she knew that it was something she had to end. I never blamed her for that, for not seeing what I saw, that we were supposed to be together. So when she told me that she didn't want to go on any more dates, said I was unusual, sort of scary, I never blamed her. And as she ended it, in that kitchen of one door down, I lifted that same mug she'd used to pour me the tea on that very first day, and brought it down on her cheekbone. Still, I never held it against her, as she fell to the floor, clawed a chunk out of my arm, and I punched her 3 times in the stomach, 1, 2, 3. Each time she replied with barking noises. I didn't blame her. It wasn't her fault. I continued on the other parts of the face, maybe shattered a couple of those nice bones of hers into powder. Her blood reached the tips of my brogues, but that was okay. I still loved her. She'd been too distracted, was all. And I think I was just trying to make her concentrate on me a little more. Violence helped that. It always did. But they pulled me away. The neighbours had heard the melee, called the police, and they took me to strange ways, for it will forever be named in my soul. Some man in a strange wig slammed an hammer and put me in a cage for 10 years. GBH, they said. Partially blinded her, they said. Animalistic aggression, they told me. But it didn't matter. I figured by the time the years had rolled on and the gates reopened, JJ would be ready for me again. We'd find our way together. Maybe the fates would work their magic once more. Maybe I'd find my way into one door down from her this time. But the years didn't roll on by, did they? They clung, gripped their claws into the side and moved slowly, and not without a certain amount of pain. I could practically hear their nails digging into my brain as they resisted. I think maybe that was why I did what I did to my cellmate. Frustration, perhaps. I woke one night screaming her name as I pounded my fist into my cellmate's nose, dug my fingers into his eyes. And then they threw more charges, more names and more years, enough to bury me deep, lock me away from my beloved. I cried that night like a baby and wept until the fly buzzed into my room, landing on my naked stomach. I looked deep into its crystal eyes as it ran those black stick legs over its face and began to speak in a voice that probably sounded little more than a faint buzzing to anyone else. But I could hear it all. Every word. It told me not to worry, that this was but the second act of my romance, and that he was a servant of fate itself. It said its name was Guta, told me that I could be reconnected with my love, but I had to offer myself up, become reborn in the body of JJ's next love. What do you mean, next love? I whispered in my raspy voice, my first words spoken in so long. Your beloved is with child, Guta said, buzzing and washing. Your beloved is with child. I nodded, understanding completely, and I had to admit, I figured she might have gone this route, found another man to keep herself occupied in my absence, found herself encumbered with the pressures and natural callings of a woman, taking a seed and starting a family. I always assumed I'd simply replace the husband, not the child, but here it was, and I knew it. This was my only way out of strange ways. This was the will of the fates. They had sent it to me in the form of Guta. I understand, I said, and I agree. From there, Guta's eyes swelled and the weight of him pressed so hard on my middle it squeezed the wind out of me. The shadows from beneath my bed began to twist and dance like black cyclones, twisting outwards, wrapping themselves around my throat. They solidified to a black fabric that lifted me up and into the air, twisting and tightening until I felt my own throat apple snap and the discs in my neck separate. More cyclones whirled out and enveloped me, wrapped me up and rinsed me out like a wet towel, and then I saw nothing but hot, swirling pink. Soft, blurring shapes turned once more to whites and blues and pinks. The pinks became more solid, more pastel, and then there were the faces. "Oh, I love him," she said, her voice familiar but not quite, like she was talking a different language. "Are you sure we can manage a baby and a puppy?" She lifted me up and held me above the lump in her stomach, and I peed accidentally. She giggled and put me down, and there I realised what I was. I padded over to the man and sniffed, tried to make out his face, the face of the man who'd occupied my love in my absence. But I couldn't make him out. My eyes hadn't quite developed yet, but I could bark, and so I did. "What breed is he?" JJ said. "Staffordshire Bull Terrier. I know. They have a bad rep, but I grew up with them ever since I was a kid. I promise you, he won't be a problem. He'll make a great protector for little Alfie and a great friend for when the boy grows up." Possession. What else to expect from strange ways? But it was all wrong. Guta said I'd possess whomever she loved next. I assumed the baby. The unborn, this Alfie. But obviously that wasn't true at all. So a dog it would be. "Who's a good boy then?" JJ said as she bent down, tickled my head. She looked a little older. I could even see the scars on her cheekbone, the milky whites of that partially blinded eye. I could see the uneven line of that side of her face. I really did leave my mark on her, didn't I? "Who's a good boy?" she said again. I couldn't help but wag my tail and lick at her hand. Finally, after all these years, contact. It wasn't quite what I wanted, but we were back together now, and that was a good thing. Yes, indeed, that was a good thing. I was fully grown by the time the baby arrived. I'd learned how to move in this body as well as I'd ever moved in my old one, and I'd got a better sense of this new world outside of my cage. The new man, her husband, was called David Mills. He liked to sing Bruce Springsteen songs in my face. He smelled of printed paper and Lynx Africa, and he would carry around a little bag of cheese cubes in his pocket. He would hand me one every now and again, pat my head, tell me I was a good un. The baby, Alfie, would often cry from his crib upstairs in the room I wasn't allowed in. I could smell him though. He stunk of milk and innocence and distraction. I knew this to be true when JJ, would that be JM now, was about to feed me, but then, after hearing little Alfie bawling, she ran upstairs to him instead. She was distracted, was all, like last time. She didn't know just how much I'd sacrificed to be with her. Wasn't aware that I'd dreamt her up in the first place. Wasn't aware that she was mine. I'd just have to simplify things for her. With David, it was easy enough. I met him at the back gate where he'd arrived home from work with his bicycle in his bright, tight-fitting clothing. He'd bent down to say, "Who's a good'un?" And I replied with my teeth on his throat, ripping out the nugget that hid there in the same way I'd been pulling apart those chew toys they kept giving me. I have to admit, my jaws were stronger in this body, and I liked it. I felt the bubbles of David's throat kick into my mouth for a while, until he stopped moving. I think he might have tried to call for help, but I couldn't understand him anymore. I then padded inside, past JJ, who was sleeping soundly on the living room sofa. The afternoon TV sang her a lullaby as I walked up the stairs, leaving red paw prints as I went. "Puppy?" I heard her say, half asleep. I stopped in my tracks, half expecting her to lift and turn her head to see me like this, but she didn't. She dropped her head to the pillow once more, tired out from baby Alfie. I made my way up and into the room I wasn't allowed in. It was all white and soft and perfect. I heard the faint breathing on the air as I kicked up my front paws and set them on the side of the crib. Poor little guy looked weak, pathetic even. I'll be honest, I was having doubts at that point. Even I knew this was wrong. That this was a level of monstrosity which far surpassed anything I'd ever done before. But then, the little creature opened its watery blue eyes, wrinkled its pale face into red, and started to wail. "I'm coming," JJ called from downstairs. Rain tapped gently at the window, and I saw the face that watched there. Those same crystal eyes. "Mother's coming," JJ called as Alfie took it up a notch. She sounded so tired, so exhausted, and that was when I knew. This baby was a distraction. It was only supposed to be me and her. I showed my teeth. I didn't blame the baby for what came next. It didn't know any better. Maybe one day it would understand, if it could. This was all for love, baby. All for love.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Other Stories. Chew Toy was written by Luke Condor, narrated by Josh Curran, edited by Carl Hughes, with music by Tank2333 and Tom Robson. If you enjoyed this episode, then you might be interested to know that we are just getting ready to publish our next Patreon-exclusive episode, Hell's Kitchen, a Gordon Ramsay horror story. A story about what happens when one of the mouthiest, most arrogant celebrity chefs is asked to cook for the gods themselves. So if that sounds like your kind of fish and chips, go to patreon.com/hawkandcleaver and become a patron today. You'll also get early ad-free access to episodes, free comics and novels, and exclusive episodes of which some, not all, contain Gordon Ramsay. So once again, that's patreon.com/hawkandcleaver and pledge from as little as $1. Until next time.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.